Is this Santana? That's a silly pull.
With little Rob Thomas.
How's that pull by me?
Dude, music savant. You know yourself.
You should be impressed by that. The Grant and Danny radio program is sponsored by the law firm of Kanduri and Murad. They're going to help you to draft a last will and testament or set up a trust. They'll put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Mention us to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. You can listen to us every single day between 2 and 6:30 on the Odyssey app. Wherever you are, it is free and available. Of course, 106.7 over the air in the DMV, and you can stream us in high definition on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and let's talk to our buddy David Aldridge of The Athletic. There's a lot of ground to cover with him on the Commanders front today. David, it is good catching up. I believe you were on site today for the vote, weren't you?
Still am.
Very cool. You were the first person I saw with the tweet, so I figured you either had good sourcing in the building or you were there. That is a lengthy day, so job well done by you. But 9-3 was the vote. The Commanders striking one final deal they needed to get a couple more votes today. What can you tell us about just the magnitude of this vote and how big a deal this is in the grand scheme of the stadium coming to D.C.?
Well, look, this was the big vote. I mean, there will be another vote on the 17th of September. There will be, they call a second reading. You have to have two yes votes, basically, for something to become law in the district. This gives people opportunity to kind of go back in if there's anything they want to fix or try to amend. The major thing that came up after or during the discussion on the vote was that a lot of council members want there to be kind of more stringent and faster penalties to the team if they don't get the housing component of this construction built in a timely manner. That is often a point that kind of fails with these mixed use deals that teams make, for these billion-dollar deals that teams make. They say, well, we're gonna make sure a lot of housing gets built, and the housing never gets built. I wrote a story about this in the Athletic a few months ago about Detroit, for example. They did the same deal for Little Caesars Arena. It was supposed to be this huge district and lots of housing. There's no housing. The building's been up for 8 years. That aside, this was a big day for this deal. It's going to pass on the 17th unless there's some incredible setback. And the Commanders, again, unless there's some incredible setback, are going to be back in Washington, D.C.
There's a whole generation of fans, David, younger than us, that could, you know, it could be in Timbuktu for all they care. They just kind of want the new stadium. How would you how do you explain, because I've struggled to do it. I don't have a great answer for this. How do you explain to the younger folks why it's so special to those of us kind of like our age and up?
I think it's difficult. It's, you know, reference point for things like this is LeBron and Michael Jordan. If you didn't see Michael Jordan play, there's nothing I can do that can convince you that Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time if the only player you've seen is LeBron. So people who are 30 and younger, rightly, because LeBron's been on the scene for the last 20 years, think LeBron's the best player ever. As I've said many times, he's got a case. The case is wrong, but he's got a case. But yeah, so I get it that people, you know, who didn't go to RFK, who weren't at RFK, don't understand what being at RFK meant to the team and to the city. I can only tell you, you should ask people who did get to go to games at RFK. You should ask players who played at RFK what it was like and the advantage that the team had by playing there more than 30 years that they played there, and how special and galvanizing a thing it was for the city. You know, you saw the whole city at those games. You saw Jack Kent Cook and his rich friends in the box, but you saw a lot of working class people in the stands. I hope, fellas, that you will see working class people in the stands at the new stadium. My experience in recent stadium constructions, regardless of the sport, regardless of the league, is that you don't get many working class people to get in those stadiums because the tickets are too expensive. And that has really diminished home court, home field advantage in a lot of places because it's not the real fans. So I hope that the Commanders, as they contemplate who's going to be in their stadium, understand that they have to have people who really provide the lung power and who really are passionate about this team have a place in this, in their stadium, where they can cheer and root the team on.
David Aldridge of The Athletic. Yeah, I want to get back into that, because that is certainly not the trend in sports. It's suites over seats. You know, when you spend this kind of money, you are trying to do business and hobnob with the people with the money, right? And we know that there's going to be PSLs, and I think it's going to be really hard for people like me with a family to just take your kids to the game. We'll talk about that in a second. But before we even get there, I got to say, I'm immensely impressed that they got this thing across the finish line as quickly as they did. You know, on the show, we have talked to, I don't know, a half dozen city council members and the mayor at different points. Getting to know Mark Klaus a little bit in this process, I think he's super sharp and crushed it. But, I mean, they did change this deal as needed to suit that council member and this council member. And even today, we're talking to Eric Flack of Channel 9 yesterday. They had 7 votes for sure. They weren't sure that they could get 8. They got 2 people to swing across because they altered something else. What does this say about the ownership group, Klaus, the new president, and really his first big mission? Like, this was not an easy plane to land on this runway, and they did it pretty effectively.
Yeah, I'll certainly say that, you know, everybody on the council, really, everybody, even the people that voted no, all commended the job that the commanders, and particularly Mark Klaus, did on this. Like, he listened. He really did listen. Sometimes the answer back was still no, but he listened. And there was quite a bit of movement. Now, that's part of the sausage getting made in any legislation. There's got to be some compromise and some give and take to get anything done. You don't want to see how the sausage gets made on these things. But, somebody who just sat through the total number of hours was 18 hours. I didn't sit through 18 hours, but I sat through about 7 hours of testimony over the previous 2 days. You do not want to see how this gets done. It is tedious. It is difficult. And we only see the public part of it. We don't even see the real horse trading that goes on. But the commanders were very willing to listen. They did not come in with the attitude of, we're going to do this and there's nothing you can do about it, because that would have been problematic. They came in and there was some give and take. They did make a lot of concessions. There was a lot of things that Phil Mendelson, the chair of the council, said had to be clawed back. There had to be some revenues clawed back to the district. And, you know, the numbers fly around. The claim is somewhere around $640 million in actual revenues and $100 million in additional benefits that he says the city now gets. And the commanders had to commit to some more money, $50 million in community benefits specifically for wards 5, which abuts this Ward 6 and 7, where the stadium's going to be built, because they wanted to make sure that more actual district residents were touched by this in a meaningful way. You know, not just to drive past the stadium and, you know, with your pom-pom on your car, but to actually have some financial skin in the game. And they did that, and that's a credit to the team to be willing to do that. Now, having said that, guys, you know, this isn't charity stadium building. You know, Josh Harris is going to make a lot of money on this stadium, and the people that run the commanders are going to make a lot of money, not just on the stadium, but on the mixed use development and the entertainment district. They're going to get a cut of all of that. Right. So let's not hold a telethon for Josh Harris. but they did do the work that was necessary to get 9 out of 12, which is a pretty good, you know, pretty good vote for any piece of legislation across the finish line. And as you, to your point, in a very, very fast time frame. Remember, it wasn't, you know, it was Christmas when the Senate somehow voted to give D.C. the land back. Like, that was 7 months ago. It wasn't a year and a half ago. This got done in about 7 months, which is an amazingly fast time frame to get something this big done.
And we had city council members on this show within the last month. I mean, 2 weeks that were saying, we'll be ready to vote in the fall. And then within a couple of days, Mendelson strikes the deal and they set up an August 1st vote. I mean, they were saying the first vote could be late September, early October. So they moved and shaked here. They got some things done.
They did. And that was, you know, the team really was putting the pressure on to get this done soon, because they want the stadium up by 2030 so that they can bid on the 2031 Women's World Cup and some other things that are nearby, and getting the line for Super Bowls. I mean, we can't ignore that. Now, it's 2 years, so if it goes up in 30, they can't host the Super Bowl until 2032 because the NFL wants to see the rollout and see what problems remain and what kinks remain before they award a Super Bowl. But certainly they want to get in line as soon as possible for things like that.
David, you've been going to a lot of stadiums for a number of years now, covering sports at the high level that you have. What's something that they got to get right here, just in terms of maybe a concern of yours or something that you go, you better not play around with this. You better make sure that this is up to snuff.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I remember when I was at the school student paper at American University, and they passed, they finally got an on-campus basketball court that seats about 3,800 people. And I remember our advisor saying, they can only build this stadium one time, David. They can't mess it up. Mm. And so that's what has led me on every stadium deal going forward from then on was the same thing. They can only build this one time. They can't build it twice, you know. So, I would say certainly, look, they're going to have all the bells and whistles and all the seats are going to be really nice. And there's going to be nice cup holders and great amenities. And you're going to get food delivered and, you know, through drones or planes or something. Like, it's going to be, you know, for the people that have the money, it's going to be very nice. But again, I come back to, what about the people that maybe can't afford to go to the game? You know, that can't afford to pay for public seat licenses so that they can buy seats. Are there seats in the building for them and their families, for working class people like my dad, who took me to one or two games as a mailman back in the day? You know, and it was like I found a piece of gold the one or two times I got to go to a Redskins game back in the day. You know, are people like that going to be able to get in the stadium? I worry about that. I worry about traffic. It's a ton of traffic. It's a lot of cars. There's one metro station. There's talk that they're going to, what they call infill, a new metro station nearby. I think they're going to have to do that. They're going to have another place to service public transportation. They're going to have another entranceway at Stadium Armory that's close to the, yep, to the facility. They're going to have to figure out things that they didn't have any, weren't even around back in the RFK days, like where's the Uber set up? Where's the rideshare set up? Where's the bike set up? You know, you go to Nats Park, you see hundreds of spaces for people to put their bikes in, to bike to the games. You got to have that. You know, you're going to have that. So how is this going to work with this entertainment district? You know, where are people going to be able to park at the entertainment district and walk over? How's that going to work? You know, so all of those things have to be ironed out. There's a million details. But to me, the main thing, again, as a tax-paying citizen of the District of Columbia, I would like for people who live in the District of Columbia to be able to afford to go to some of the games and some of the other events that are going to be at that stadium.
Yeah, so to double-click on that, one of the things that came out of, I think it was yesterday's hearing, they were pressed on the PSLs, and they acknowledged that a lot of the money they'd be raising to cover some of, you know, their costs would be from PSLs. I mean, those can be thousands of dollars. And for people that don't know,
thousands of dollars, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, basically, this is just like money that you spend for permission to have season tickets. I don't have a better way to describe it. But like, you know what it is? It's like the posting fee to negotiate with Shohei Ohtani. Like, I'll give you $20 million, and then I get to negotiate with Ohtani.
Right.
That just prices people out. So this is very secondary. I'm very excited about the stadium. It's going to be awesome. And this would be the case, by the way, whether they built in D.C. or Landover or anywhere. It's just what happens now. But you're talking about something that's important. How do you do that in this era? Because you go to SoFi, you know, any of these stadiums, that's kind of what, there's not that many cheap tickets. It is really hard to afford to go. Like, is there even a path to that anymore?
Well, there's got to be, I think you seek a balance, right? I think it has to be a balance. You can't just have 75% of the stadium be suites and people with PSLs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's going to be, you can monetize it that way, but you don't, again, you lose the fans. You don't have your fans in the stand. I remember when the Warriors moved from Oracle into their new building, Chase Center downtown. And they assured me, we're going to have 85% of our fan base is going to go with us. No, they didn't. They didn't.
When was that, David?
Rich people. It's rich people in the building. It's okay. I mean, you can do that. It's your building. You can charge whatever you want. But you lost a lot of what made playing the Warriors really hard, which was people screaming really loud for that team in a building that was smaller and more intimate than the one you're in now. And so you have to strike a balance between the revenue generating part of a stadium, which is selling tickets and selling suites and selling sponsorships and all that, to people who may or may not really be fans of the team, and carving out space for the people who really aren't, the people who buy the t-shirts and the hats and the caps and the jerseys and the people that put paint on their face and take their shirts off. You know, they got to be in there too for you to win football games. This is about winning football games. You know, like, it's nice to have a really nice stadium, but if they don't help you win football games, it doesn't matter. We were in Detroit for the playoff game last year. That's a bigger stadium than this is going to be. But that stadium's loud. And part of the reason it's loud is because they didn't price out everybody who works there. You know what I mean? Like, they have tickets for people that actually are Lions fans, and it makes a difference, and it will make a difference here.
David, hard to ask you to summarize 7+ hours of testimony and thoughts and commentary. But was there something that somebody said that, you know what, that made you go, like you know what, that's actually a good point, or I hadn't thought of that, or anything interesting kind of come out of those long discussions?
I mean, you know, I always go back to parking and traffic, and I think it was Charles Allen. He's been on your show a lot, I think, over the last few months, right? And he talked about that the original plan was 4,500 cars an hour going through neighborhoods to go to these parking lots. And just think about that. Just think about what it would be like if you're on your block. You just had 4,500 cars pass your block in an hour. Like, what would that do to the traffic patterns in your neighborhood? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you can't take your kids out on a stroll with 4,500 cars passing by. Like, it's impossible, right? So you just think about that. Like, yeah, that's a lot of cars. That's a lot of cars. So, you know, there has to be some – that's why the public transportation piece, I think, is so important. You know, I don't think any of us could imagine – Nats Park without the Navy Yard Metro, right? You just couldn't imagine it, right? You know, it just wouldn't work. And now you're talking about a stadium that's going to be, well, not twice as big, but, you know, have 20,000, 25,000 more seats than Nats Park has. You know, so you got to get the Metro piece right in a big and enhanced way to make this work for most people. And not only for the stadium, but remember, guys, they're building a neighborhood, basically, from scratch. I mean, they're going to have restaurants and retail and all of these bells and whistles. Well, people have to get there. They have to, they have to get there. How do they get there? And this is where they've got to figure out a thing that makes sense for a lot of people who are going to try to get there, whether it's on game days or non-game days.
The great David Aldrich, a Hall of Famer. Check him out, the Athletic columnist in town. Of course, AU Eagles, he is DC through and through. We appreciate you, David. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
You got it. David Aldridge, great insight on the stadium, joining us here on Grant and Danny. If you're just jumping in the car, leaving work, a 9-3 vote today in favor of the Commanders coming home to the district from the city council. There will be another vote set up now for September the 17th. If that vote goes similarly, they need 8 yeses, then we're moving on. And the local business part of this is over. D.C. is behind the Commanders, and then you need some congressional approval, and it's time to break ground.
Put some shovels in the ground, and let's get digging. Everyone have their ceremony. Let's take a picture. Now, can you guys move to the side, please? We're trying to build something.
Bring on the Women's World Cup. Bring on, hopefully, a Super Bowl. Let's bring on some NFL games in 2030. The bigger story in town today is Terry McLaurin requesting a trade. Getting to the bottom of how you guys are feeling. We'll get back to you on that next. 800-636-1067. Here's what I want to get into. For the people that are not in any way having their feelings toward their emotions about Terry change, does that just mean they're not going to? Like, is there, if he's held out, that wasn't a problem. He's held in, that's not a problem. He's requested a trade, it's still my sweet Terry. Okay, if you're just of the belief that this is all cost of doing business and it's fine, does that mean there's nothing that can happen? Or when would you actually start to turn more team than player on this. 800-636-1067 is the number on the Fan. All 6:45 start. Terry McLaurin's requested a trade. That's put a damper on things today. Could have been a real nice celebratory afternoon with the stadium vote going 9-3 in favor of the local football operation. But here we are talking Terry McLaurin. Our poll of the day continuing to be weighed in on. We're asking you if your support of McLaurin in his holdout is wavering at all. And we're taking calls on that at 800-636-1067. For the people who find themselves every bit as adamantly backing McLaurin as they were at the beginning, I'm wondering, is there anything he could do to change that? I got a tweet here from someone who says, Terry would have to badmouth the team. He'd have to badmouth players in order for me to jump off ship. Even in his presser, he didn't badmouth the team, which is something I don't see happening. He says the other thing he could do to lose my support would be asking for an unreasonable amount. I do think if we found out his agent's looking for, say, $40 million, $38 million, $37 million, something like that, or even anything above Justin Jefferson, like $36 million, I think that would be a massive turning point. And a lot of people would go, all right, dude, that's $13 million than Cortland Sutton, who's your age, just got. Now, I know you're better than Cortland Sutton, but that's a different zip code.
Yeah, $13 million better? I don't know.
So that would really hurt him, and it's smart from the agent's standpoint that the number that they're offering him hasn't gotten out. And to the team's credit, they're probably lower than a lot of people would think they should be, so they're doing a good job not to let their number out either. It's why we've all been talking about this, but numbers aren't coming out. So give Adam Peters, who doesn't leak anything, and Buddy Baker a lot of credit for that. We have not really seen the numbers floating around to the extent that you might think we would. But I actually agree with the point that he did not go scorched earth in his press conference at Eastern Motors. It was not McLaurin-esque. It was not the work of somebody who is the ultimate team guy. But he basically said, I think I'm worth this. I feel like I'm not being valued or appreciated. This is why I think I'm worth this. This is how it works in this league, that you attach your worth to your salary. It's about, he didn't say ego, but kind of credibility and standing with other players as much as it is the dollar bills. But he never once called out Adam Peters. Like, Trey Hendrickson called it members of the Bengals a liar.
Liars and thunks, yeah.
I mean, he really made it venomous and personal, and McLaurin has not done that at all.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder if he doesn't, if he hasn't turned you now, when will it happen? And for some, it'll never happen, right? For some, he could insult your mom and kick your dog and you know, try to break into your car, and you go, I shouldn't have left it there. Love you, Terry. So I understand that. I mean,
me and my, sorry, my car was locked. I should have unlocked it for you.
My fault, buddy. It got in your way.
Well, I do think if he misses games, then now everybody's turning on him. And maybe it doesn't even have to be not playing against the Giants in week one. If he's not back when it's go time, when it's actual regular season mode, not regular season meaning the games are being played, but the mode where you've turned the page, it's your dress rehearsal preseason game, it's the time where you're ramping up. If he's not back, it's very, very different than August 1st,
right?
Training camp's happening, and you're signing some autographs and skipping practice number 6.
Precisely. Yeah, so, I mean, for me, again, I'm not mad yet. I fully am able to kind of balance multiple factors here. The anger will come when you start ruining this season. We're not there yet. We're not even close to that. But when you start not being your best, when you start making the receiver room worse, when you start, you don't show up in practice, so now you're going to have a pulled hamstring and miss 6 weeks and not be the same guy. Now you're messing with my thing when you're under contract.
Don't cost me my best chance at being really, really good in a long, long time. They accidentally got to the NFC Championship game last year, and it was an incredible, amazing year. This is a better team with actual expectations going in. Last year we went in thinking it was a bad team and they just went on a crazy run. That's still hard to fathom when you look back. It's one of those, did that really happen kind of things where feels out of body almost that the Commanders got as far as they did. But now you're one of the better teams in the conference with a real chance to compete in the NFC. If you ruin that, if you take away from that, if you make it harder to accomplish the things that they might be able to, well, that makes it really easy for me to feel like all of the good memories, all of the good times in our relationship are no longer as important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is now a relationship I'm okay severing. Let's go to Chris in Richmond, listening in the capital of VA. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Hey, buddy.
So, I'm aggravated. I'm aggravated at the distraction. And honestly, when I saw the news last night, my first thought was, bye. See you later. I've calmed down since then. I fully understand advocating for yourself, and I completely get, Danny, where you're coming from with, you know, your take, because Terry always seems to be team first, take the high road. So an image gets created, and now through no fault of his own for advocating for himself, it looks 10 times worse because he's not that quote unquote player who doesn't complain and cause distractions. But, you know, it's frustrating because we got rid of Snyder. All the trash was taken out. We had an unbelievable season last year. Looking forward to the potential of this year. And it's like, once again, Washington fans, we can't have nice things. The other shoe is dropping.
Right. Whatever that is, yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you, buddy.
It's just amazing that it's happening because everything has gone well, to make it succinct, but really smoothly. Everything has been conducted very professionally from the team standpoint in a way where it was admirable, where you could be prideful about it, mm-hmm. where it felt like everyone was on the same page.
It's first class all the way.
Yeah, but that's how I would put it, honestly. Everyone's been pulling the rope in the same direction mm-hmm. since the first day ownership got here. And it's worked. Like, everybody is in sync, in unison. Everybody's operating together. They all got tied up by Gordon Bombay in practice in the big rope, and they're skating in the same direction, and nobody's falling over. That's a deep cut that Danny won't get. But man, oh man, this is not that. It's so different, and it just feels... I joked the other day that, like, it's very Cincinnati Bengals. It's embarrassing is too strong, but it is that there's major division between the front office and the guy that effectively runs the locker room. That's just not a great place to be. Let's go to Martin in Portland, Oregon, listening on the Odyssey app. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, bud.
Everything's going great out here in Oregon. How's Virginia doing?
Virginia's doing great.
Virginia.
This wasn't my thought. It was one of my best friends, Brendan, in Centerville's, I thought, and I thought it was really profound. I wonder if Terry and his agent are thinking about Terry's legacy. Because if Terry was, you know, going to stay here till the end of his career, the guy wouldn't have to buy a drink anywhere for the rest of his life. He'd be a regular B. Mitch, getting appearances and paid speaking programs and stuff like that. I just feel like he's not really considering the power of really holding his whole career here in Washington.
It's a good question or a good point, I guess. I mean, I think right now when you're playing, that is not front of mind. And when you're talking about the difference between like a $75 million contract and a $50 million contract or $70 million in guarantees or $40 million, the couple hundred dollars in appearance that you might get of hanging around and being beloved, like, he's going to be able to come back and go to reunions and he'll be treated like a king. I mean, Tim Hightower runs their department.
Like their alumni office, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Ifeanyi Olaite is coming back and getting a gold jacket. Like, Terry McLaurin's going to be okay. But it is true. If you stay your entire career in one place, you're obviously a bigger star.
But beyond that, I mean, John Riggins didn't play for an entire year and came back. Still beloved. You know, like, these types of months and weeks, when we're in them, it feels like an eternity. We talk about this in a different angle, and there's a new, this person leaked out this, and now this person says that, and now he demands this. If it's all settled and he plays good football, this is barely a footnote. It's a 20 years from now. Hey, do you remember that 1 month when it looked like Terry may not play for them? And then he did, and he caught a bunch of passes and was still really good, and he's a Ring of Fame player. It becomes a footnote. Now, if it turns truly sideways and it's so bad that he never plays here again, it'll change that legacy, but it's something that I would consider.
What do we make of the 10% who say they're out on McLaurin? I want to get into that. Plus, I have said all day long there's no way the Commanders trade Terry. You can ask for a trade as much as you want to. Request, demand, doesn't matter. Because that's the next thing. You could demand a trade. You go from requesting to demanding a trade. And to that, I would still say, good to know. Thanks. Cool.
Appreciate it.
And that's kind of the end of that conversation. Should they at some point pick up the phone when somebody calls, or would you always just not even bother? G&D on the Fan.
You know, he held out, lost $200,000, never should have held out because you can't get that money back. The fines are non-waivable when you're on your second contract. And now he just hopes that they will, before week one, give him an offer that he'll deem worthy of acceptance unless they do indeed decide to trade him. But I remember Myles Garrett back in Super Bowl week put out the statement and made the rounds at the media center saying how he wanted out of Cleveland. And there's nothing like money to make a guy decide he wants to stick around.
Yeah, that would be one way for this to all go away. Everyone will be hugging each other at the press conference if and when the team and Terry McLaurin decide they're ready to do a deal. And I think whether there's a new contract or not, we're headed in that direction where this all kind of gets forgotten one way or the other. The problem is if they don't get an LTD done, like that long-term deal now, are we going to do all this again next year when they tag him? A franchise tag means no mini camp, no training camp, hold in, ankles hurt, demanding a trade. I don't want to play this game again. I'd like to get off this ride. And the juice is just not worth the squeeze. Now, maybe if he goes out there and he catches 80 balls for 1,175 yards and 11 touchdowns, then I'll be willing to play the game again if Washington wins a couple playoff games and is on the doorstep of a Super Bowl again. But if he catches, you know, 64 balls, if everything comes down a little bit because he gets off to a slow start or has some soft tissue thing and misses a couple weeks, I might just throw my hand up and go, let's not do this anymore. Let's figure out a way to make a trade. But that's next offseason.
Right.
For right now, he's playing football for you, and we're wondering about this 10% of people who are out on Terry McLaurin. How do you think they got there? 800-636-1067.
I mean, to me, it's you probably started on third base in that regard. You're one of those guys that goes, he's under contract. I anything else, I can't see past that.
Yeah, I think the 10% that's out on him are people that most of them, I think, philosophically do the football's like my job or whatever, where you signed a contract, you should be at work right now, and the fact that you're not at work means you're a bad guy, and you're a millionaire, by the way, who made $25 million last year, and how dare you say you need more money? Like, I think that's most of the 10%.
I think that's your baseline. But again, it's part of the end for me also, where I go, do what you got to do, man. Make your point, thrash around, call up whatever press conference you want to call, get pissed off. You owe me a football season. So whenever you're ready to do that, that's the end of this tunnel, is you playing football for this year for a team that can be pretty good. Like, that's at the end for me. I'm not there yet, but a lot of those people start there.
Breer made a pretty good point, too, about the cash versus the cap number for McLaurin.
Mm-hmm.
That was
Florio. Yeah.
Florio talked about this, that he's only going to be making, like in cash, coming to him $15 million this year, where everyone keeps talking about the cap number closer to 30 and how he's going to be making that much this year. Let's go to Dave in Rockville on the Fan. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great. Good to hear from you. Glad we got the stadium done.
Yes, sir.
Well, Closer.
Done-ish.
Yeah.
Done adjacent.
Pretty darn close.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I'm one of those guys you guys are talking about. I mean, I like Terry. Root for him. I think he's a great guy. But, hey, if he doesn't want to play for his contract that he agreed to, I mean, I don't see any owners, you know, not living up to their agreements with players. And I think players need to live up to their agreement. He needs to be out there practicing. And if he doesn't, hey, he can just sit out or he can come play for the deal that he's got, and we'll tag him next year. And then when he's, you know, 32, 33, we'll see what he can make then. I don't think anybody's going to pay him big money once he went a couple years down the road here.
Yeah, that's the big problem for him is you have a problem getting paid off a career year now at 30 or 29, but about to be 30. How about 2 years from now? Only part of that call I'll dive at and kind of take a little issue with is the idea that owners never screw over the players. Every time you get cut before the end of your contract, a owner didn't hold up their end of the bargain, to use his phrase. Now, if you got all of your guaranteed money, that's certainly the amount of money that you were guaranteed to get. But if I sign a 3-year contract for $24 million and you get, after 2 years, you cut me and I'm leaving a bunch of money on the table because I didn't have guaranteed money in the third year, we could argue over how unfair that is, but the phrase he used was, I don't see owners not holding up their end of the bargain. I think that's absolutely the team doing that in this same way. I told you you were going to be on my team for 3 years and $24 million. Another team might have offered you 3 years and $20 million, and you turned them down because I told you 3 and 24, and then I actually got rid of you after 2 and 16, and you had no guaranteed money left. So now you're back looking after an injury, possibly, by the way, after you just tore your ACL for money, and there's nobody coming towards you because you're older and you're coming off an injury. So that happens all the time.
Yeah, the way this league works, there's not much guaranteed in that regard. They can cut you as soon as they deem it appropriate. I guess the only point that you could respond to the response with is, let's say I paid you to catch 10 touchdowns, you only caught 5. I can't lower your salary. There's no fader I can turn you down. The cut point is kind of the trump card here.
Sure.
Right?
I mean,
the instant they decide you're not worth it anymore, I can get out, they'll get out of that contract.
Guys could underachieve, to your point. To me, the response to that is you can overachieve and I don't get anything for it.
Right.
You know, if you paid me to be a backup and now I got 227 carries and ran for 1,200 yards, I still made nothing. I still made, you know, the league minimum potentially. I mean, that's the comp to me. I don't know if it's analogous to the other thing we were talking about. Let's go to Paul in D.C. What's up, Paul?
Hey, how you doing, man?
What's up, Paul?
Hey, so they both wrong. I'm not necessarily 100% on Terry's side or 100% on the Commander's side. Terry, there's no wrong answer here to the fans, just to be clear. Terry has a right to ask for what he wants to ask for. He has a right to ask for a trade. And the team has a right to say, no, we don't feel that way because you're still under contract. And on top of that, we got you for 2 more years on the franchise tag. However, as I normally say 100 times, great organizations don't get to this point. The Lakers paid Kobe, you know, for the final 2 years, even though he wasn't at the peak of his game because of what he did for them the prior 19 years or 18 years. Terry has been a good guy. He's done what he's supposed to do on and off the field, just like he said. And he's been productive, 1,000-yard seasons every year. Pay the man, you know, within range of the money that you owe him. Now, all this might be a tactic for everybody, bringing them in at the last week, then that way he don't risk himself to be injured, you know, right before the season starts. I don't know, but, you know, maybe Adam Peters and them are looking at it from that standpoint. Until it gets dire, we good. And so they bring him in right before the season starts.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. Yeah, I mean, the idea that a good organization doesn't do this, I don't know if I totally buy that. It gets buffoonish in Cincinnati when verbal barbs are happening, but San Francisco didn't have a good year last year, but they're pretty good. They did this a lot. They had a lot of good players that were up for contracts.
Yeah,
they did this dance a decent amount.
But they also have, I was talking to someone in the league about this yesterday, they also have a lot of guys that aren't happy there all the time. Like I don't know how great the culture is necessarily. In other words, when they get paid, they stay. These veteran players, these Debos, Ayuks, Trent Williams, but they have a lot of injuries. They've got a lot of – there's always someone that's agitating that wants a new deal, that's threatening to not come. This year it was Trent Williams. Now Juwan Jennings is doing it. Like, they have a culture, basically, of fighting with players over money over the last several years.
That's fair, but, you know, the Chiefs and Chris Jones couldn't come to an agreement until forever.
Sure.
They're in the Super Bowl every year.
That's a better example than San Francisco, in my opinion. Also a rarity. San Francisco, this is what they major in.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think we should talk about that next. Like, Adam Peters came up at the University of the 49ers,
right,
and they're the ones that always do this. And this is the first time he's had to deal with one of these. Like, I came out yesterday with the thing about the wide receivers who have requested trades, Ayuk, Debo. Two of the three guys I came up with just over the last couple of years were guys in San Francisco, where Peters was. And now Peters is doing it here. maybe this is just how he's going to operate. And my point is, one of these every now and then, because of, you know, Chris Jones, the Chiefs, whatever, maybe I could sign off on that. If this is just the way you do business, see the Cowboys with CeeDee Lamb, with Dak Prescott, with Micah Parsons.
It's an annual thing.
That is bad. Like, that is not a way to run the shop. And I wonder if Peters came up in an organization where that's how they do it. Like, is this something we should get used to? Is that something we should want to have to be used to? We're Grant and Danny.